you feel like you can't control your use of technology? You're not alone. In her new book, Unwired, Gaining Control Over Addictive Technologies, Gaia Bernstein argues that technology addiction is a real problem and that we need to take steps to address it. Gaia is a law professor and a mother of three, and in her new book, she offers a comprehensive look at the problem of technology addiction, including its causes, its effects, and what we can do about it. Here she is to share five of her big ideas.
Hi, I'm Gaia Bernstein, author of Unwired, Gaining Control Over Addictive Technologies. I'm a law professor. I ran a school outreach program for children and parents about technology overuse, and I'm also the mom of three kids who grew up in a world surrounded by screens. I'm going to share with you five of the big ideas from my book. Big idea number one, the illusion of control. We now know we spend a huge amount of time on our screens, but most of us, if asked, do you want to spend 5 hours on your phone a day, would probably say no. So how did this happen? Sometime around 2009, things started changing. Smartphones and social networks became popular. We felt in control when we made many small choices, like texting on the go or choosing one app after another. But each of these small choices became a habit. And once we got started, we often spent much more time on our devices than we ever meant to. In a way, we were like the frog in the famous fable about the frog in the boiling water. According to the fable, if you throw a frog into boiling water, it will jump out and stay alive. But if instead you put it into tepid water and then slowly bring the water to a boil, it will not realize the danger and will be cooked to death. For me, when I got my first smartphone, I started using my commute to work, texting my kids' babysitters, emailing work emails, to be as efficient as I could. It took only a month to get to a point where I rarely took my eyes off my phone throughout the commute. I was often surprised to find out as I got off the train that a student or a colleague was in the same car throughout the ride and I never saw them. What happened to me was in no way special. Like me, many others around that time gradually changed how they used their devices. We made each decision separately. We never thought about the whole picture. Sometime around 2009, we voluntarily stepped into the tepid water. And under the illusion that we are the choosers, that we are in control, we adopted a very different way of living. We endorsed a choice many of us would have rejected if we had reflected on it. And by the time the water was boiling and we realized how much time we were spending on screens, it was too late to just jump out. Our lives at that point revolved around screens. It's important to understand that it was no coincidence that we ended up spending so much time online. We were lured in by the tech companies who covertly influenced our decision-making. They used manipulative designs, tempting us through likes, autoplays, and unexpected rewards to stay on for longer. We were under the illusion of control because we thought we were the choosers. But what we never did was make the autonomous decision that we want to dedicate so much of our time to our screens. Big idea number two. Our self-blame history is repeating itself. I started noticing around 2015 how screens changed everyday life. But I remember really clearly the moment I realized that something was seriously wrong. I came with my family to a friend's house for dinner. They had an 11-year-old son who was playing with his parents' iPad. When we came in, his parents told him to stop playing and give him the iPad. The boy got very angry and refused. He then tried to snatch it back from his mom and regressed to toddler-type wailing to get it back. Through the whole evening, he used every manipulation in his power to get the iPad back. I was watching his parents feeling desperate and suddenly remembered a time some years earlier in my parents' house. My father, a heavy smoker, was diagnosed with emphysema. We hoped he will realize he has to stop smoking, but he refused. We tried to convince him, we even took his cigarettes away. But exactly like my friend's son, my father was uncharacteristically angry and did everything he could to get his cigarette pack back. I then spent years studying what the battles against tobacco, food, and the battle to protect privacy can teach us about how to stop technology addiction. Looking into the past helped me understand an important paradox. Why, despite all we know about tech companies addicting us, we still feel personally responsible and keep blaming ourselves. We do so because the tech industry is using an old strategy, a strategy used by other powerful industries before it. They shift responsibility away from themselves by arguing that we are choosing to consume their products, so we are responsible for the consequences. For example, when smokers and their families sued cigarette companies because they got sick with lung cancer and were dying, they kept losing in court. They lost because the tobacco industry convinced the courts that smokers chose to smoke, so they are responsible for their lung cancer and other health problems. The tech industry is already doing just that. And they're doing more than just arguing that users are choosing to use their products. They also give users tools like parental controls or Apple screen time, which let us know how much time we spend online, to convince us that we are the choosers and then are responsible if we end up spending more time online. What is important is that we can also learn from the past about where this argument breaks. One place is where there is evidence of intent to addict. When we learn that the tobacco companies knew that nicotine was addictive and used it to addict smokers, courts finally held the tobacco industry responsible, and smokers started winning cases. The evidence is already available for tech addiction. Whistleblowers reported that tech companies purposefully addicted their users to prolong their time online. Another vulnerable spot of the self-responsibility argument is kids. We don't see kids as responsible choice makers, so we're more likely to take legal action to protect them. For example, to fight obesity, schools are required to weigh kids and send their BMI to parents. Children already are and will be the first place for action against technology overuse. Big idea number three, self-help is a trap, not the solution. When we realize how many hours we spend online, we naturally turn to psychologists for solutions. Many psychologists were alarmed by what they saw, and they turned to their tools and suggested solutions involving self-control and self-help. There are many self-help techniques out there, including taking a digital detox or becoming intentional about how we spend our time online, and even just taking screen breaks. Many people try them. The problem is that despite all this effort, things are not changing. Actually, the problem is getting worse. Our screen time just keeps trickling up. So why do we fail? The first reason we fail is because these self-help measures place the responsibility on us to fight an untenable battle. It is a battle against technology companies that hired experienced psychologists to help them design technologies that will keep us online for longer. For example, they took away our stopping cues. On Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, we have a feature called the infinite scroll. We never reach the end of a page, which would cue us to stop. On Netflix and YouTube, we have the autoplay. When one video ends, the next one starts immediately. Again, no natural place to stop. The second reason we fail is because technology companies not only created designs that addict us, they also created self-help tools that are not meant to help us reduce our time online. The goal of these tools is to redirect our attention to ourselves and our responsibility. They call their self-help tools digital well-being tools. Many of these tools, like Apple Screen Time, support self-monitoring. Tech companies also let us set time limits on certain apps, but we can easily override them. They also give us an option to make our phone less irresistible by making the screen gray. Tech companies never meant these tools to succeed because their business model relies on maximizing user time online. None of these features change the phone's built-in default settings to effectively limit time or to reduce the glowing allure of the device. They also do not target the most addictive features of the products, like the infinite scroll, which takes away our stopping cues, or the swipe to refresh, which entices us with dopamine bursts when they keep swiping to check for more likes or comments. Focusing on self-help is a trap because it leads us to fight the battle in the wrong place, within ourselves and inside our homes, instead of taking it to the public sphere. Insight number four, the ground is burning. Is excessive screen time harmful? The science wars on this topic are still on, but they're going on not because of lack of evidence, but because the monetary stakes are high. evidence of the harms threatened the tech industry's business model, which relies on extending our time online to increase its advertising revenues. By now, a large body of findings warns of a public health crisis for kids. Especially psychology studies and brain imaging research pointing to the impact on cognitive development, mental health, and attention. There are also reports from whistleblowers that tech companies for years had internal research indicating that their products harm kids, but they chose to ignore it and proceed in order to protect revenue growth. Despite all this evidence, even education policy still promotes maximizing incorporation of technology in the classroom. It's known as a laptop for every child. This trend has intensified since the pandemic. Teachers now incorporate addictive games like Minecraft and Roblox into the curriculum and post their lectures on social networks like TikTok. With all this information, as adults, we have a moral obligation to act and not neglect a whole generation of children to face the technology industry's abusive designs alone. This is a generation of children who already spent more than a decade, including a whole pandemic, in front of screens. To move forward, we need first of all to end the science wars. The tech science wars are not the first time science wars took place. They happened before. There were fierce scientific debates about whether cigarettes or junk food are harmful to consumers. Historically, science wars ended when respected professional establishments or governmental organizations endorsed the stand. History teaches a lot about how lengthy science wars can be. For example, despite all we know now about the harms of smoking, it's incredible to look back and realize that even the tobacco science wars dragged on for decades. The first major scientific studies about the harms of smoking came out in the 1950s, but it was only in 1964 that the Surgeon General announced that smoking is a major health hazard and the science wars subsided. Ending the science war has in the past and will likely again expedite the implementation of necessary legal protections. Faced with all we know now about the harms of excessive screen time for children, it is no longer justifiable to wait. We've waited so far because we worried that making a hasty determination could unnecessarily inhibit technological innovation. But right now, waiting is the riskier option. The risk is creating an irreversible future for our children. Insight number 5. From internal battles to collective action. We already spent years fighting with ourselves and with our children, blaming ourselves and them for not being successful in reducing screen time. But there's another option, and that is of fighting collectively against the real choice maker, the technology industry. This does not mean we will or should go back to a screenless, unconnected world, but we can definitely progress towards achieving a better online-offline balance. We can do this by pressuring technology companies to redesign their products. The legal movement to regain control of our time is already happening. Parents and school systems are suing social media companies and game makers for addicting kids and causing them mental harm. Legislators are constantly coming up with different bills to limit tech companies' ability to use addictive features. Many bills focus on protecting kids. But redesigning technology is not the only way. It is also about changing how we use technology in spaces. I live in New York City, where all three airports have iPads on every table. When my kids and I wait for a flight and sit down for a meal, we cannot have a conversation because four iPads separate us. It's simply not possible to avoid scrolling or playing games. These airport spaces are designed for technology overuse. This is where all of us come in. A movement to battle technology overuse cannot rely on lawyers alone. There are many examples of what we can all do to create change in how we use technology in spaces. Parents could influence their kids' schools to be more discriminating about teaching with technology or allowing use of cell phones in school, including recess. Business owners can influence how much people use screens on their premises. For example, restaurant owners can decide not to replace menus with QR codes. This will reduce the likelihood that diners will take their phone out during the meal. Online startups can opt for a different business model. Not one that is based on advertising and user time, but perhaps a pay-as-you-go model? Technology designers can evaluate whether to design a feature which main goal is to keep users online for longer. We have many options to make a collective impact. It's possible to change norms and businesses. Before the 1990s, we could never imagine bars without cigarettes. But then they became our reality. The same could happen for a better balanced tech future, once we decide to shift from internal battles to collective action. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you, Gaia. That was Gaia Bernstein with 5 Big Ideas from Unwired, Gaining Control Over Addictive Technologies. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.